Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making. And sadly, there was a lot of it made over the weekend. Over the weekend, between June 3rd and 5th, in other words, Friday to Sunday, there were more than 12 mass shootings. 12, more than 12. And I'm not misspeaking. It was over the weekend, 12 mass shootings. Some of the cities, Philadelphia, Chattanooga, Arizona in general, South Carolina, a high school graduation party, people came by and just pumped bullets into the crowd. Michigan, more than 12. Now, what are we going to do about it? This is the only country in the world where this is happening to this extent, the only country in the world. We have some different laws, there's no question about it. We have a Bill of Rights with the Second Amendment. But at the same time, it's not normal for people to just fire into a crowd. In Philadelphia, this was the entertainment district. This is where the clubs were, nightclubs, bars, restaurants, a lot of folks out having a good time. And if you look at the surveillance video from stores, you know, a lot of these stores have cameras and they just are constantly photographing the crowd. Suddenly you hear a sound and everybody starts running. Some people just came by and pumped lead into the crowd. South Carolina at the high school graduation party, they just went by the party and shot into the crowd. Shot into the crowd in Chattanooga, shot into the crowd in Arizona and Michigan. What can be done? Now, right now, I don't believe anything is going to be done. There is talk by some Democratic senators, like Chris Murphy of Connecticut, that he's had private conversations with Republicans who realize that something has to be done. But there are two problems with that. Number one is Moscow Mitch will filibuster anything, so it will take 10 Senate votes. We already have the Brady bills passed the House. It passed the House 2 years ago. If Moscow Mitch filibusters it, it takes 10 Republican votes. I do not think that there are 10 Republican votes to do anything, especially in an election year, to do anything. Remember that the Republicans have 50 Senate seats. We have 50 Senate seats. I mean, we, the Democrats, with Kamala Harris breaking a tie. But the 50 Senate seats that the Republicans hold represent a minority of the country. They represent something like the low 40%. How is that possible? Because every state gets two Senate seats. In other words, you take Alaska, it has one congressional seat, but two Senate seats. Why is that? Because congressional seats are allocated by population. And right now, each congressional district has about 700 or so thousand people in it. And why is that? Because there are 435 people in the House of Representatives. And as our population increases, you divide 435 into the population, and out comes the number of people that are in a congressional district. Rhode Island barely has two. Wyoming only has one congressman, member of the House of Representatives. Alaska has one. But Alaska has two senators, and so does Wyoming, and so does Rhode Island, and yet California, which has something like 55 congressional seats, has only two senators. And New York only has two senators. That is because of the deal struck at the birth of our nation, where southern states were very, very concerned about the northern mercantile states, the states that manufactured, that ship product, whereas the South produced raw materials like cotton and depended on slavery for its economy, would be overwhelmed if there was proportional representation in the Senate. They would be swamped. So they put in a check and a safeguard, and they said, we're not going to go along with the union unless you give us, everybody gets two senators. So these people that are obstructing anything having to do with mass killings represent a minority of the country. Now, the bill that Murphy of Connecticut is so proud of really doesn't scratch the problem at all, in my opinion. The Brady bill doesn't scratch the problem at all. And Moscow Mitch will filibuster even that. You know, for one thing, it would standardize background checks. Right now, you have to have a background check if you go into a normal gun store. But if you show up in a parking lot, there's a flyer in your neighborhood that goes, gun show, gun sales, you can go to a parking lot. You can go at midnight. Guy comes up, you want to buy an AR-15, here it is. No background check, that's not illegal in most areas, not illegal. You can go into a bar. Guy says, hey, do you want to buy a gun? I need some money. Yeah, how much? $100. Okay, here's a Glock. Just hand it to him. There are kits you can buy. You can get on the internet and assemble a gun yourself. There are guns with any registration or identification number shaved off. They never had them at all. The problem to me is twofold. One is assault rifles, and number two is people 18 years old able to buy them. Neither of those issues is going to be dealt with in the bill that the Democrats hope they can get through and may not even get through. The Republicans are intransigent. They want 18-year-olds to be able to buy any gun they want. And they are intransigent that people should be able to buy assault rifles with clips that can shoot 30, 60, 100 rounds. And then you have a spare clip attached to your belt. You just throw it in. You do another 30 rounds. Those are the weapons of mass assassins. Those are the weapons of mass assassins. And people who sell guns have a perverted culture. I told you the story some time ago. A guy goes into a gun store, and the guy says, okay, what kind of gun you want? The guy goes, well, do you have anything that's high power that could pierce a limousine? Gun store owner laughed. I sure do. You know, now, what kind of guy would, first of all, I would call the police if a guy said that. Secondly, what kind of gun store owner is out of his mind enough to do it? He doesn't care. There's this anti-authoritarian strain that essentially exalts in the murder of authority. I mean, that's really what's going on. I have a solution, and the solution is this. Machine guns and submachine guns were outlawed in the 1930s. Now, if you've ever seen, there's some old movies that are really neat. The FBI story. I don't know if you ever saw. Just Google, look at the FBI story with Jimmy Stewart. And it's all about the early stages of the Federal Bureau of Investigation under J. Edgar Hoover. Now, J. Edgar Hoover was a problematic character, and I don't want to get into all the bad things he did, but he did put the FBI together. And these guys go around, the bad guys had Tommy guns, and they all had these fedoras on, and they'd kick open a door and spray the room. The FBI agents had to take them down. Those guns were outlawed for civilians. Why were they outlawed for civilians? Because they were military weapons. And everybody said, fine. And the NRA supported their outlawing in the 1930s. In 1994, when Bill Clinton was president, assault weapons were banned with the support of the NRA. With the support of the NRA. Because assault weapons are military weapons. The solution to me is to, people say, oh, well, and Murphy said this, the Connecticut senator, oh, well, Republicans won't go along with banning assault rifles. Well, in the present climate, there can be more schools shot up, more nurseries, anything can be shot up. They can go into a hospital and shoot it up, and they have. Well, to me, the answer is military weapons should not be in the hands of civilians. And I'd approach it a little differently. Nuclear weapons cannot be possessed by civilians in the United States. Neither can chemical and biological weapons. Neither can shoulder-held missile launchers, stingers, javelins. You don't want one of these guys, like the shooter in Buffalo or Uvalde, shooting down a commercial airplane. So machine guns are outlawed. You can't have a machine gun. Actually, a little known fact is, if you go through a rigorous interview and application process and show a need, you can, but nobody who's illegitimate would come close to passing that test. Why, listen to me, why is an AR-15 and AK-47 not a machine gun, a submachine gun? Why does a guy need a clip with 30 rounds or more that's being used to mow down crowds? Why is that the case? I think that Biden should take the bull by the horns and designate them as military weapons and worry about the court cases later. Worry about the court cases later. And the age should be increased to 21. And 18, when I was 18, I had no judgment whatsoever. Believe me, none whatsoever. And you get a kid who has a grievance or he's been bullied, he's going to spray the crowd. An 18-year-old guy has no judgment. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. Well, development in the gubernatorial race just came down this weekend. Turns out that Tim Michaels did not file enough signatures for the proper paperwork. The Democrats have filed a complaint. They've also filed a complaint in the same breath against our own Patty Shockner up in Hudson, who's running for the assembly. She had been a state senator and a very good one. Scored a great upset in a Republican area, then was beaten in the next election, now running for the assembly. She made the same mistake that Michaels did. And to be fair, the Democrats have grieved both of them, challenged both of them. And Shockner, to her credit, came out and said, yeah, I think that's exactly right. And she fessed up. And not that she did anything deliberately wrong. It was a matter of a paperwork glitch. Well, here's what Michaels did. And here's my view of what may occur. This could knock him off the ballot. And if it knocks him off the ballot, he is the Trump-endorsed candidate. It's very, very clear that the Duchess of Foxconn Clayfish is not going to beat Tony Evers. That's very, very clear. The Duchess herself does not have the gravitas, doesn't have the ideas. She is Walker's cheerleader. She's going nowhere. Not even Trump wanted her. Nobody wants her. She's not going to win. Michaels, the theory is, well, he's a fresh face. And early on, I had some hopes that, you know, not that a Republican would win, but that we'd hedge our bets and at least have somebody on the Republican side who wasn't out to destroy our democracy. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. Jury's out. He came out and said he wanted to abolish the Wisconsin Election Commission, just like the others, turn the vote counting over to the partisan legislature. That is a constitutional crisis, in my view. But here's what Michaels did. If you run for office, just so you know, there is a requirement in Wisconsin that you list your address on the paper so people can look at it as they're signing it, your nomination papers, and go, oh, yeah, he's sort of in my area, my general area, my county, you know, whatever. Some areas of the state have residential addresses and mailing addresses. So especially in Waukesha County, as an example, Michaels lives in Chiniqua, but his mailing address is Heartland. And that's not uncommon. I have a relative who basically lives in Delafield, but the mailing address is Oconomowoc. And so what do you do with that? The requirement is that you list both. You say, he lives at this address, in Shaniqua, and his mailing address is Heartland with the zip code. You must do that. Evers did it with his papers. The Duchess did it. Rampton apparently did it. Nicholson did it. How hard can it be? They all did it. Michaels didn't do it. He put down only the Chiniqua address. Now, you may say, ah, come on, Matt. Come on. That's trivial. Well, you know something? Trivial is in the eye of the beholder. And during the last presidential election, there were two Green candidates for president who were knocked off the ballot. Or I should say, one was for president, and I think the other was for another office, knocked off the ballot because they didn't comply with this rule. And Brian Hagedorn was the key vote. The three Republicans wanted to put them on because they thought that Green candidates would suck away votes from Biden and from any of our other candidates. And the Democrats and Hagedorn said, hey, wait a minute, there are rules. Everybody's going, oh, well, we got to have rules. Well, okay, you got to have rules. Here are the rules. If you have two addresses, one your residential address, one your mailing address, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. And so they were knocked off the ballot. There was another race, I believe, I don't know if it ever got to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where the people looked at it and said, well, the people that signed these papers knew who the guy was. They knew the area that he lived, and that's good enough. In other words, substantial compliance. Substantial compliance is a very, very difficult doctrine that can be applied in contract law, but you don't apply it in criminal law. You don't say, well, he substantially complied even though his victim died. You know, that kind of thing. You don't do that. Now, this is somewhere in between. So what happens if Michaels is knocked off the ballot and he has just a few days to respond to this thing, and that the mail ballots have to be printed, I believe, by June 9. So this thing is coming down pretty quick. Now, June 9 is Thursday. So we will know if he is on the ballot. If he's not on the ballot, he obviously will go to court. Then the Wisconsin Supreme Court will have to decide, do they delay the mail printing of the mail ballots, convene a hasty hearing. I suspect what will happen is that the three Republicans, because Michaels right now looks like he's surging, would hope that the Republican Party will say he should be put on the ballot. The strict constructionists, you know, everybody's going, strict construction? You want strict construction? I'll give you strict construction. How about following the rules? That would be strict construction, wouldn't it? And you never know. I mean, if Hagedorn goes along with it and the others vote the other way, Michaels would not be on the ballot. The other thing to me on this thing is, you know, this is kind of a minor slop. No, it's not minor, but sloppy. I mean, come on, guy. If you're going to run a company, if you're going to run the state, you run the state, you know, maybe, you know, businessmen are used to getting away with things. How about dotting your I's and crossing your T's? You can't get away as governor with what you got away as a CEO. I mean, you just can't. And you shouldn't. So we will see what happens. We will absolutely see what happens. And I'd say it's a toss-up. I'd say it's an absolute toss-up what's going to happen. Stand by. You're going to find out this week. You'll find out this week. We had a scare in Pennsylvania. We have a Senate candidate whom I think a lot of, John Fetterman, big guy, about 6'8", I think, maybe 6'9", 6'8", tattoos, hoodies, and all that. Smart, though. Honest guy. Good Democrat, head in the right place. Anyway, you know, he had a stroke, and he was out of the commission at a campaigning right after the primary, and everybody is worried. Well, now he's back in full strength, but his interview was really kind of shocking. He said, I quote, I almost died, as he's recovering from the stroke right now. He said, I ignored warning signs for years, because a guy who's 6'8 or 9 has a very big heart. And it's sort of like a Great Dane as opposed to a Chihuahua. I mean, you know, Great Danes may not live as long as Chihuahua, you know what I mean? And their hearts are huge, and you got to treat them very well. And this guy, he ignored warning signs for years, and he was given doctor's advice to take blood thinners. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but, you know, to avoid clots, that kind of thing, especially after surgery. But some people should do it because you get a clot, throw it to your brain or your heart, you can get killed, you can die. So he had a stroke. He had a stroke on May 13. And it turns out he was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy. Now, cardiomyopathy is something somewhat common, especially in older people. But, you know, your heart sometimes doesn't beat as well or rhythmically, and has a low heartbeat or a high heartbeat. There are different kinds of cardiomyopathy. Some, your heart's real hard. If a surgeon were to grab it real hard, sometimes it's squishy and too soft. Hey, guy, why don't you go to a cardiologist occasionally? You know, when you turn 50, to everybody out there on your annual checkup, have a cardiology checkup. That's your pump. And we darn near lost John Fetterman on May 13th. So thank goodness we did not. And I'm happy to report he's back in full strength. And I think he's going to win against Mehmet Oz. And I'll talk about that race in a little bit. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, this is a story at first I didn't believe. It broke in the New York Times over the weekend. It's a searing story. And I thought that Donald Trump, I thought I'd seen him go to the depths and the dregs. But this is amazing. Here's the deal. You know, one of the things about him that's hard to puzzle through, you know, why he still is popular in a lot of areas, I think it's because he has kind of a salesman's personality, kind of an affable, you know, sort of aw shucks, bad boy personality, but basically a personality that's seductive and some people like it. Now, let me tell you what he did. The day before January 6th, in other words, January 5th, his senior aide went to the Secret Service and the FBI, his chief of staff did, and said that he feared and Pence feared for Pence's safety because they were afraid that Trump would turn on him and was turning on him. Now, this is January 5th, folks. This is not January 6th. This is January 5th. This is January 5th. Now, for the Vice President of the United States, the second theoretically most powerful person in the country, because if something happened to the president, he was the president, just like Harry Truman took over from Franklin Roosevelt in April 1945 when Roosevelt died. Well, for the Vice President to go to federal law enforcement and say, through his chief of staff. His chief of staff did not do that on his own. He wasn't freelancing. Through his chief of staff saying, frankly, I'm concerned about my safety because of the president, not because of ISIS and jihadists, not because of Putin, not because of drug cartels in Mexico, not because of transnational gangs in El Salvador, because of the president who picked me for his ticket. And what he was alluding to was that Trump had called him in and said, when you get up there in your ceremonial reception of the certification of the vote, which is purely showmanship, all 50 governors and secretaries of state certified the electors. They certified them. There are more Republican governors than there are Democratic governors. There are more Republican secretaries of state than there are Democratic secretaries of state, and yet they all certified it. And Trump told Pence, he didn't ask him. He said, when it comes up, you say, I do not accept it. And I think that this should be investigated for fraud by the attorney general. And then I'm going to stay in office and they'll go to court and I'll appeal it. And I'll get at least another year in the presidency. And then maybe the Supreme Court and the Republicans will go, well, he's already another year in it, so why don't we give him the end of the term. That was the deal. The Green Bay sweep. This is part of it, centerpiece of it. Pence initially, believe it or not, was thinking of going along with that. And then he called several people, including a prior vice president under George H.W. Bush, who said, are you crazy? Don't go near that. So then he told Trump, I'm not going to do it. And then whatever Trump said and was doing, Pence picked up on it, and he had his chief of staff go to the Secret Service and the FBI and say, I'm afraid for my life. You know something? That was a good premonition. The next day, a gallows suddenly appeared. Now, how does a gallows, first of all, how does a gallows appear on the Capitol grounds? You think a couple of carpenters spent 10 minutes doing it? No, they didn't do that. Secondly, if I took a U-Haul and hauled a gallows to the Capitol, what do you think would happen? You think the cops would say, arrest me? They should. Well, the gallows was there, this mob. Trump talked to them. Trump, by the way, got them to come there in the first place because Trump sent a save the date card, basically. He said, come on, January 6th, something big is going to happen. And January 6th, what else is going on January 6th? It was just the ceremonial reception by the vice president of the certifications. That's all. This is ceremonial. They'd already been sent into the Senate. Not only that, this crowd goes through and they start to yell, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence. Remember? Hang Mike Pence. That's the same as kill Mike Pence. They went through yelling, kill Mike Pence. Same as murder Mike Pence. Murder Mike Pence is the same as strangle Mike Pence. Strangle Mike Pence. And all the reports, and this is why it's going to be fascinating to watch the hearing, the January 6th commission, starting this week. It's going to be fascinating to see the reports on how Trump acted in the White House. We know how he did. We're going to hear it live. He chuckled, he laughed, and he fist pumped, and he said, yeah, you know, that's it. And then Kevin McCarthy and the others said, you got to call it off. Well, why, Kevin? They apparently care more about their country than you do. Trump is not affable. He is not affable. He was overjoyed at the prospect of the murder of his vice president. That is the first time in history that that has occurred. Thomas Jefferson, when he was president, didn't like his vice president, Aaron Burr. I didn't like Aaron Burr either, but Thomas Jefferson didn't go, let's kill Aaron Burr. You see what I'm saying? Didn't say that. I'll tell you what, Abraham Lincoln didn't like Andrew Johnson, his vice president, but he didn't go, let's kill Andrew Johnson. For a president of the United States to have so alarmed his vice president that they had to go to his security detail and say to them, I'm concerned about my safety. And for a president of the United States, and this is the day before the insurrection, for a president of the United States to sit in his office watching television during the insurrection, watching police officers get punched and kicked, a woman shot and killed, a woman trampled to death, a police officer, a Capitol police officer, almost kicked to death until he pleaded that he had four children. Police officers dragged down the stairs with their heads bumping. One had an eye gouged out. Another had his finger ripped off. You know, and for the president of the United States to sit there chuckling and going, go, man, go, like he's watching a football game. This is a sick puppy. He's a very sick puppy. Now, he never deserved to be president. He got in with, for a lot of reasons, sort of Russian interference, but also Comey getting up on his hind legs and saying he was investigating Hillary Clinton about 2 weeks before the election, and not saying he's also investigating Trump for the Russia collusion. That tipped it. I think Comey should have gone to prison for that. That was obstructing an election, and that was an absolute betrayal of his oath of office and an absolute betrayal of his duty to the country. Comey is no good. Comey is no good. But in this particular case, that that divulgence, and the other thing that kills me about this thing, Pence, of course, is sniffing around, lying in the weeds, may run for president. I have a theory. I'll share it with you right now. He's not going to make it. But why is he not going to make it? It's not that he's not going to make it because Trump is opposed to him. He's not going to make it because he has no guts. He should have gotten up right away after that and said, Trump, in effect, orchestrated my near assassination. And that guy has no business ever coming back to the White House. And I will do it. I'm a conservative, but I'm also not going to betray our country to Putin. I'll stand up for a democracy. If he represented himself with the values of Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney and attacked Trump for encouraging his assassination and showed courage, I think he'd be a lot higher in the polls. I really do. But because he was mealy-mouthed about it, he went sniffing around, mealy-mouthed, saying that he likes Trump, he supports Trump and all that. Are you going to support a guy who looks at a gallows on the Capitol grounds and goes, yeah, go get him, my own vice president? This is a sick puppy, very, very sick puppy. Said it before, I'll say it now. During the French Revolution and the Place de Concorde, if you've never been to the Place de Concorde, it's very, very historical, great place, some great cafes in Paris, France. You go there, Marie Antoinette was beheaded there. Instead of a gallows, they had a guillotine. And they hauled it in and they hauled her on a rope and threw in the guillotine and cut her head off. That's pretty nasty. It's very cold, very cold. That's not a lot different from what Trump was laughing at right here with his own vice president. So there were people, I think Paul Ryan was one of them, who said that the senators would have absolutely impeached and convicted Trump. In other words, he was impeached in the House after January 6th, but would have convicted him because they were afraid, they were chicken. If this had been a secret vote, there would have been 90 votes to throw him out of office. They're afraid of him. He's a werewolf. He's a Rasputin. Rasputin was the sort of the Svengali-like character that hung around the Tsar and the Tsarina in Russia towards the end of the Tsardom, and was feared by everybody, but managed to worm his way in. And that's what Trump is. He's a Rasputin. He is a malignant force. Only a malignant force would have chuckled, absolutely chuckled, over what was about to happen, he thought, to his vice president. Tell you what, the Republican Party is on a sick course. I just told you about Trump. Not going to believe this. In Florida, on the Miami-Dade Republican Executive Committee, there are at least six members of the Proud Boys, including some of them who are facing criminal charges over the January 6th insurrection. They roughed up or tussled with a woman in a cocktail dress whether she could have entrance to a $250 dinner with Trump. They, quote, escorted, end quote, her out. Imagine you're a woman, you show up, you have a nice dress, and there's six Proud Boys on the Republican committee administering the event, and they, quote, escort you out. Come on. Come on. You don't expect that if you're a woman showing up, wanting to go to a nice, nice event. She sued them for a restraining order. A restraining order. What kind of Republican Party is this that has six Proud Boys who tussle with a woman in a cocktail dress? So she has to get a restraining order against them. And they are on the Miami-Dade Republican Executive Committee, and several of them are facing insurrection charges. This is a sick, cancerous party. Going to break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, a terrible thing happened over the weekend. It was a jihadist atrocity in Nigeria. More than 50 people, it may have been 100, were slaughtered at St. Francis Catholic Church during Mass. And jihadist gunmen, there are a number of them, went into the church and mowed down the crowd, And then there's some outside who mowed down the people trying to run away. Now, I've talked about this before, but there is a slow Islamicization of Africa, much like the Islamicization of Asia 1,000 years ago. Christians in Nigeria and in the Congo and a lot of other places are simply being genocided. Jihadists will go into a hospital and they'll go down the beds and say, "What's your religion?" And Christians are murdered in their beds. In Nigeria, fairly recently, there was a woman, a Christian woman who was a university student, who was beaten to death and burned, killed by a mob because they claimed that she had posted a blasphemous message about the prophet. There was another man who was killed and burned because he had an argument with a Muslim cleric. This has got to stop. I was glad to see that Joe Biden has sent troops and also is bombing Al-Shabaab headquarters, Al-Shabaab encampments in Africa. But it should be a foreign policy objective of the United States that we do not want the Islamization of Africa. It's coming down from the north, and it's simply murder. You know, Islam, the word means submission, and jihad, the word means struggle. And it's a struggle to either forcibly convert or murder the host population. And nobody is paying attention to this, absolutely nobody. Europe has not paid attention to it. And as a result, you have, frankly, a slow Islamicization of Europe. The United States has got to pay attention to it. And our immigration policy is not recognizing this. It is imperative that we keep jihad out of this country and that we expel all vestiges of jihad. And the fact of the matter is that it is incompatible with democracy. It's incompatible with liberal Western democracy. There are many, many fine people from that persuasion, but they themselves are killed by people who set themselves up as executioner, judge, and decider of theological issues. Anwar Sadat was a great man, murdered by his guards. The governor of the Punjab stood up for a Christian woman who'd been sentenced to death for blasphemy because somebody lied about her. And he was killed by his bodyguard, and thousands of people showed up for the funeral of his bodyguard. It has got to be the policy of the United States that we will not tolerate this in a liberal democracy. And that means that the Democratic Party, our immigration policy, has got to change. And you're hearing this now in this show, but I'm very angry that in Nigeria now, more than 50, probably 100 people were just mowed down during mass. And nobody is paying attention to it. Nobody is paying attention to it. Okay. Let's go to something humorous. Sergey Lavrov, the genocidal pervert, sadist, just like Putin, was the foreign minister of Russia, decided to fly to Serbia. Why? Because Serbia considers itself an ally of Russia. They're both Slavic countries. They're both Russian Orthodox. And but Serbia has a real decision to make because they want to be included in the EU for financial and trade reasons. They want to be in the EU, but obviously the EU has barred Sergey Lavrov and anybody else from Russia from using European airspace. He canceled his trip. Why did he cancel his trip? He canceled his trip because Bulgaria, North Macedonia, and Montenegro wouldn't let him use their airspace. And you really cannot get to Serbia by air without going over some restricted airspace. And good for them. God bless them. Bulgaria especially, because Bulgaria is not a wealthy country and it's very near Russia, but they stood tall. North Macedonia, why do they call it North Macedonia? Because they had a dispute with Greece. Greece, remember Philip of Macedon? Philip of Macedon, Alexander the Great's father. You know who Alexander the Great's teacher was? Aristotle. They think they're Macedonians too. They like the name Macedonia, so they break away, call themselves North Macedonia. And Montenegro. And Montenegro, God bless them, very, very small country. They put in for NATO. They were one of the last ones to get in. You know who filibustered it? Rand Paul. Rand Paul is pro-Russian, pro-Putin, filibustered Montenegro. And then it took a lot of monkey business in the Senate. It took a lot of monkey business in the Senate to get Montenegro past Rand Paul's filibuster. And they stood tall. So Sergey Lavrov did not get to go to Serbia. Now, could he call Serbia? Yeah, of course he could call Serbia. Could he email Serbia? Of course he could do all of that. But the truth of the matter is that not being able to go there and not being able to supposedly muster some kind of support from a European country was a good thing. And hats are off, absolutely hats are off. Hats are off to Bulgaria, North Macedonia, and Montenegro. And while we're at this, there's a couple of other things that I want to hit. And this has nothing to do with Sergey Lavrov in Bulgaria, North Macedonia, and Montenegro. But there are glimmers of hope in the Republican Party, and it's kind of a weak signal, but it's beginning to look like Ron DeSantis, whom I don't think is any good and I don't want him as president, is starting to beat Donald Trump in various conservative straw polls around the country. Now, DeSantis would be a disaster as president, but he doesn't have any name recognition in the general public. And I think we'd have a much easier time against him than Trump. Trump, it turns out, may announce very soon. His advisors are saying, for 2024, his advisors are saying, wait till after the November elections and so forth. But he's seen people start to sniff around. And plus, he's an egomaniac. So he may announce sometime in the next couple of weeks, believe it or not. He may announce by July. And he just lost the Western Conservative Caucus straw poll to DeSantis. There's a straw poll in May here in Wisconsin in the Republican Party. He lost 38% to 32% to DeSantis. Now, I think this is a sign that people, as a Hutchinson of Arkansas has just come out against Trump and said, you know, we got to get rid of this guy. We can't have him in the next election. There is a growing sentiment, you know, who will bell the cat? You know, while the cat's away, the mice will play. The mice are afraid of the cat. Well, the mice are no longer afraid of the cat. And when that happens and they drag him down and either he doesn't run or he has to drop out of the race, that's going to be a very, very good thing for the party. The downside of that, and a good thing for the United States, the downside of that is we are going to end up possibly with a candidate, and I don't want to say worse than Trump, because Trump has a certain charisma that's really hurt the country, but somebody who's unacceptable as president. So we're going to have to redouble our efforts in the presidential race in 2024. But in the meantime, be aware that Trump is getting chipped away at pretty significantly in these various straw polls. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.